Hi, I'm Eric.
I'm Alec.
We're the Petchy Brothers.
And this is StoryTap,
where we try to tap the potential of an idea and turn it into a story.
This episode, Breaking Bread. A man learns the importance of loyalty by trying to run a restaurant while keeping his family's mob ties a secret.
So, we had an idea. We've done a lot of food movies already. One of them...
Yum, yum.
We straight up did the Ratatouille sequel. We did Comida. And did we do another one? I feel like we did a third one.
I think so. Did we do a restaurant one?
I don't think so.
I don't either. No, I'm thinking of the art one.
Yeah, that one felt kind of like a restaurant one.
Yeah.
Anyway. An idea I had... it was like freshman year of college. Oh, this was a disaster. Was, what did I call it? Bowen Diner.
You did?
And it wasn't a capstone class. I don't know what you'd call it. It was once a week. It was a seminar class. I don't remember what the title was, but it was like independent project. And it was one free hour. And everybody I spoke with, like my advisors and everybody, really recommended it to me. So I was like, oh, I see. This more hours just looks better on a resume or whatever. Wrong. No, that is not the case. They told me to do that because they didn't care what I did. They were like, oh, you're a business student and a film student? You can afford to waste time. But anyway, Bowen Diner was... Originally, it was an idea for a series where a guy, like a kid who goes off to do something, I haven't decided... For the sake of this episode, I haven't decided. Kid goes off to do something and then suddenly has to come back, Albus Dumbledore style, come back home and suddenly like become the man of the house.
Ooh.
Because his dad, who ran the family diner, was arrested. And it's over time you've revealed like, his dad was like involved in some kind of crime, organized crime, I suppose.
Yeah.
And after a while, he, rather than just step up and... provide for his family, he like straight up becomes like the new Don Michael Corleone style. It did not go that way back in high school. Freshman year, that was me learning how hard it is to make a short film. It turned into The Driver,
right.
A short film that I just recently found again in my Google Drive.
How is it?
I'm not gonna even answer that.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I will answer that. It's that bad.
Okay.
However, it's that bad.
Yeah, all
right. If Matthew listens to this episode, he will hound me forever because I showed him like a 1 minute clip and I just turned it off. It was so embarrassing. And every day since he's asked me, oh, where's the extended director's cut of The Driver? Oh my gosh, it was so bad. The guy who helped me work on it, who was in that class with me, he was like, hey, I want to show The Driver to some of my friends. Do you have it? And I didn't even look for it. I just said no. I was like, sorry, man. I think that hard drive is buried in a landfill somewhere. Because I thought that was true. And then I've just found it on my Google Drive.
With all those copies of E.T. in the desert.
Yeah. It's the cream of the terrible crop. But I think there's a pretty cool story there. At, like, its purest form.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I see it.
It's Breaking Bad, but with a restaurant.
It's baking bread.
I just took, like, a mental pause of, like, a 1 second to make, like, mouth noises. I lean away from the mic over here. And when I come back, you had said that, and I was like, quick, catch up. Oh, my
God. Yeah.
That was a good one. As terrible as it was, that was a good one.
Yeah, I think it was, I'd thought of that pun before.
It's baking bread. Oh my gosh. Well, okay. I've started the timer. We're about 3 minutes in.
Great. That is how time works. Is that 3 minutes later? It'll be 3 minutes later.
So, we're a little out of practice, but the way this usually goes, let's start
from... Speak for yourself. I do this alone in my room all the time.
Admirable. I don't.
It is not.
No, I mean...
That's a bad sign, Eric, and you should tell someone.
Well, sure, bad for a normal person, not for an artist. Boom.
That's the meanest thing you've ever called me.
Okay, tangent. Being an artist is monomania. That's it.
Life's barely long enough to get good at one thing.
Yeah, like if this, coming up with stories and just pitching them and then selling them, all the rights included,
yeah.
I could do that.
Huh.
That would be fine. That'll be a lot of fun.
I like it.
So, usually we come up for the first half, chronologically, to the midpoint.
All right.
There could be some sort of midpoint twist. This is going to be a movie?
Let's make it a movie. So, obviously, the inciting incident is his father's arrest.
Yes.
So, what do we have in the way of establishment, the day-to-day?
To think of it, to sort of streamline the structure of it, I think we should split that first act in two.
Ooh.
Usually, that first act before the inciting incident is the day-to-day in all of the set pieces that we're going to see. Or the day-to-day for all of the main characters. So here's the day-to-day. Here's how things normally are. And the normal everyday life for our protagonist. This is how it is at home, and this is how it is at work, is how I usually like to think about it.
Right.
But instead,
right,
I think we should break it up in two. The protagonist, the movie starts, and our protagonist, who doesn't have a name yet, he or she is doing their thing that we are trying to sort of trick the audience into thinking of as the day-to-day. Like, I'm here at culinary school, very highbrow, I want to be a chef. And then halfway through, suddenly, boom, I have to go back home to my small town diner that my dad was running. And my plan to, like, be heralded as a hero in this small town is now derailed because, you know, my dad is arrested by the FBI or whoever. And I have to step up as Albus Dumbledore style, if you read the books. It wasn't very clear in the movies. like in the Deathly Hallows, he has to come back home and take over and all these great things. Suddenly are in his mind, taken from him. And so those are the two halves. Normal day-to-day that we're kind of expecting, and then the normal day-to-day of what things are like in the small town back home.
Got it. Okay. Okay, yeah. I think that actually all works, and that we've got two normals. It's the normal he wants, and then... So his dad's arrest becomes not the inciting incident. It becomes two halves. So what's our new inciting incident? I mean, it's whatever leads this kid to become involved in the activity of crimbiminals.
Yeah. The inciting incident of his dad being arrested can still think of that as like the event that sort of kicks it off. Just, you know, for the time code of the movie of where that event usually happens.
Uh-huh.
That's just when it catches up with him, you know? So that's when it really sinks in. Halfway to the inciting incident is when he goes home. And up until the inciting incident is when it, like, sinks in. Like, oh, I'm not just visiting. I'm staying.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I am now, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Cool. So that first half of that first act, where's he at? What were you imagining when I said, you know, high-tier culinary school?
I don't know, something in a major city. I think they do, like, apprenticeships in restaurants.
Yeah.
So he's working in a restaurant. He's made, like, maybe one of those secondary positions, like garmanger.
Yeah.
Garmanger is, like, kind of the person who kind of does everything in the restaurant. Like, they're sort of, like, respected support staff. It's kind of a less specialized role that people take on in a restaurant when they're angling to eventually become a chef.
And we all know how lucrative working in a kitchen is. So, suspension of disbelief. We're going to pretend it you do make money working in a kitchen. So we're going to say he's saved up some money for a plot device later on.
Okay.
And the plan he has right now with the money is he's going to... I just read Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential. He's going to, like, Shanghai all of the, like, experts he's met into opening his own kitchen. You know?
All right, yeah.
And that is the plan that is cut short by the letter or the call or whatever that brings him back to small town USA.
Nice.
Nice.
I mean, it doesn't exactly have to be his money. Like, he could be talking to the owner of the restaurant he works in.
There you go.
Like, we got a location, we got all this, we got all blah, 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 blah.
Oh, man, I'm digging it now.
All right, yeah.
This is like, gonna be great.
You'll be the head chef, and I'll start you off as a 15% partner since it's your first location, or blah, 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 blah.
Awesome.
Some numbers that don't matter. And then he gets the phone call, the telegram that says, Pa has been taken to the clink.
Yeah. Okay. And before we move on to that second half of that first act. Holy. What is that?
A very angry motorcycle.
Oh my god.
Riding a mechanical tiger.
Yeah. Why is it not getting further away? Okay, it's gone. But okay. Anyway.
It hurt us.
It's coming back.
But how? It was so loud.
Before we move on to that second half of that first act, what does he want in, you know, like a single word? Is it money, or is it notoriety, or is it something else?
He's a monomaniac. Eric, throwback to you putting ourselves in this movie. He wants to be accomplished. He wants to... money and status and everything are nice, but it's about becoming great.
Mm.
Greatness,
okay,
is the goal here.
All right. Cool. So what I'm thinking of setting up with that is he realizes that it's really hard to open his own kitchen restaurant. Huh?
What does that have to do with organized crime?
Well, what I was thinking was the midpoint kind of twist is, no one's, at some, okay, how about this? First pinch point, up until the inciting incident is the same, but then he sort of tries to make both work. He's like, I will stay here, and I'm going to be so great that I'm going to be so great at the crime thing. Yeah, here we go. Inciting incident. And he says, I'm going to shut down the whole crime thing. I'm going to tell the mob bosses, sorry, look elsewhere for, like, your usual meetup spot and money laundering business.
Right. Okay.
And up until the midpoint, he's like, no crime, but I'm going to make the restaurant plan work, and I'm going to put it here in small town. I'm going to make New York and California and everybody, I'm going to make them come to us. We're going to be that good. And then up until the midpoint is, oh my gosh, this is really hard. The rest of the world is not going to come to me, no matter how good I am.
Yeah.
And then that midpoint twist is him sort of giving in, like, the mobsters have the connections and the money to make my restaurant that good.
Okay. Okay. Chopping I actually like that, is that they have associates on the coasts. They have the connections and can make this a place to talk about.
Yeah, they got.
And it's like,
in
and all
newspapers.
You need to do is let us own 10% and put some cash through here.
Exactly. There you go. Okay, so now we have the major milestones. Characters. Who is our main character? I think this is a very, what I decide very first is the major theme and how it impacts, like, the cultural identity of the character. Mm-hmm. And this, I imagine, is a very white, Italian, Irish, kind of American white male story.
All right.
And usually what I like to do is turn that on its head by making it, like, you know, black or Latino female.
Mm-hmm.
But... I mean, all of that doesn't impact the story too much. It can either be we use what's expected and it goes where you'd expect it to, or we kind of turn things on its head to show you just how universal some themes can be. What do you think?
Yeah, up to you.
All right. Well, let's make it a white boy.
All right.
All right. So we've got our white boy, David. Davey. Let's call him Davey.
Davey's nice.
Or how about Mike? Because, like, Michael Corleone.
There we go.
Right now, his name
is
Mike.
Usually do that. We usually do that during the break.
That's right. Okay, so we've got our protagonist.
He'll be Mike for now.
Mike. We have Mike go from super bougie other side of the world, not other side of the world, but far away from small town in culinary school. Or, no, he's out of culinary school. He has been working as
a garmanger.
A garmanger.
Royale with cheese.
He's working at a garmanger with cheese. And he gets the letter. We're talking about character. Who does Mike know that we could use to come back? Someone who's going to work in his kitchen that he gets from what kind of people are, I mean, working in kitchens. Hey, Anthony Bourdain says it's like a pirate crew, so like I wouldn't be surprised at all if Mike pitched them, hey, let's get in with the mob, and all of them were like, hell yeah, let's
but
go.
Let's do this. Let's see, who works in kitchens? Ex-military? People with substance abuse problems? Definitely. Because how else can you stay awake that long?
Oh, for real.
I don't know, who else works in kitchens? Undocumented immigrants?
This is baller. It's just a pirate crew.
Yeah.
So now we know like the kind of
literally
type of,
you could tell me
badasses.
Literally anybody is working in a restaurant kitchen and I'd believe you.
Yeah. So we can pick and choose whatever the story needs. We can just be like, "Oh, that's one of the people who works in the kitchen." And, you know, as long as they're a badass.
Right. Yeah.
So we've got that, and with the letter comes, it's like, "Whoa." We're leaving all of that behind. And then after the midpoint, it can be like we can bring them back. Or after the pinch point.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. Calls, and they all come in, and somehow they all arrived at the same time in their different cars, and then they do like that high five, and they have all got a different handshake.
It's like a heist movie.
Exactly.
We're gathering the crew or whatever. So, oh boy, what kind of statement do we want to make with this? Is it monomania is bad? Or don't get up on your high horse telling people that they shouldn't be monomanic about things?
Don't do crimes.
Okay.
Oh, do crimes.
Okay. All right. Log line. Be a criminal.
Yeah.
That's not even a log line. Okay. Ooh, we should have thought of that. We can think of that during the break.
Oh, you think of it during the break.
That's very risky, not knowing where a story's going, getting to, like, halfway through. So, now that we know the major plot points, let's get into the details of the actual events themselves. How does that scene, that very first scene, what do we see, what happens?
Well, he's doing chef stuff.
He's doing chefy stuff.
Chefing, cutting stuff up, sprinkling green things on brown things. That's most of what cooking is.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of cooking.
It's a lot of cooking. Sprinkle the green thing on a brown thing.
That could be something. He's like the sous of a like a really fancy and clearly busy restaurant. He's telling everybody what to do. He's actually doing cooking himself. He yells at somebody, but they respect him. And then you're like, just when you're getting the idea, this guy is the chef. He is in charge. The chef walks in. Chef's back. Sue. Shut up. I'm in charge. So this guy, and so we're like, okay. He's got the chops, but not the title.
Right.
And then cut to, yeah, there we go. Okay. There we have the everyday at work. That shows us who he, like, that shows us how he operates.
Uh-huh.
And then we have what we present that in a pretty short, just like a single scene, and then we cut to what we're trying to trick the audience is the day-to-day at home. He's like in his small apartment or whatever, and he's like looking at his bank account, and he's eating like top ramen, and then you see he's got a boatload in the bank, and then he's like chilling with his friends, drinking on the roof or whatever, and then he starts talking big about where he's going to go and all this great stuff, and then maybe Yeah, okay, here we go. A sequence, not just a single scene, but a sequence, a couple of scenes of him eating Top Ramen, talking to some friends, and in every single one of those scenes, you see he's getting calls from home, and he's like, I'll talk to him later, I'll talk to him later, I'll talk to him later, and then he gets a call from, like, unknown number, and then he's like, well, definitely blocking that, and then, like, a guy in a suit is like, we called you earlier today, and you didn't pick up, and he's like, right. Oh, damn. So when he gets those calls from home, he's telling his, like, fellow cook buddies, yeah, exposition, exposition, exposition. My dad and my, I don't know, little younger siblings. I own a small diner. That's, I was always going to be a cook. My dad just saw that I was a dope dude, and he was like, ah, you are destined for bigger, better things.
All right.
And then smash cut to cutting the act in half. Welcome to small town. Everybody remembers him, and he's like, oh gosh, this is embarrassing. I don't want anybody to recognize me. I'm just here. And he's telling people, he's talking to Mr. FBI. There we go. There's our first sort of antagonist potential character. Mr. FBI. He's like, so you didn't know your dad was into all this? And he's like, no. Then please don't, like, pretend I was a part of it, because I'm just here to get my affairs in order, deal with estate tax, and get out. And
wait, so is his dad dead?
No, I mean, I don't know how ownership works if you're put into... Estate tax only happens when someone dies, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
My bad. Okay. So, we establish... Now we have Mike, Mr. FBI, Mike's dad, Mike's Hard Lemonade. That can be his little brother's name. That's his little brother's name, is Mike's Hard Lemonade. No. Okay, we've got Mike's little brother, who is, like, high school.
All right.
And that's sort of why Mike has to step up and not just, you know, say, F this, I'm still going through with my plan.
All right.
Okay. We've got, and he's like, seeing, an FBI guy suspects he's, like, in on it. So Mr. FBI is like, hey, I'm not going to go easy on you. And he's like, Mike is, yeah, I get that. Do whatever you got to do. And Mr. FBI really thinks, like, he's like, you're not going to trick me. And so that goes on for a while. The diner, is there a way that ownership could be transferred? Or how about, it doesn't matter that Mike's dad is now in federal prison, because he, like, the restaurant was already, like, in Mike's name, you know?
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Like, you can transfer ownership of corporations over time, like, having somebody, like, you pay for it over time, and all that crap.
Yeah, and that can be an expositional conversation between Mike and his dad.
Right.
That way we establish his dad as a character, yeah. And also... Okay, good. That's good.
Moving money from here to there for, yes, like, the last 6 years. So you own most of the restaurant now.
Boom. This is great.
Okay.
And then, oh gosh, this is awesome. And Mike is like, okay, we're going to fast track my... I can do both. This can be the restaurant I was going to do. So he calls up all of his buddies, and he, like, big talks him. And I only know this might be feasible as a plot point because I read Kitchen Confidential, because he did this. He called up everybody, and he, like, Shanghai'd them. And he was, and he, like, talked a big game. He was like, this is the big one. Come out to wherever. I'm going to be, like, the next big celebrity chef. And everybody believed him, and so they all left. And so Mike now has this team of people. And he's like, and they're all like, dude, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, dude, I have, like, however much money I thought I needed, I have 10% more, just in case. And they're like, dang, you're so well put together. And then reality hits of owning a restaurant.
Because it's a restaurant, even, which is somehow the only thing harder and worse than working in a restaurant.
Exactly. He's like, this absolutely sucks. Midpoint. All right. I'm going to go to the mob guys, and I'm going to go for a small loan. And here we go. Ooh, this is going to be tight. But you can't tell I'm frat snapping because I can't really frat snap. He goes to the mob guy, who we've established in the past couple of scenes. He's like, hey, Mikey, I was a friend of your dad's. Some people call me the conciliary, but... And Mike is like, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to have to lie to the FBI. And so blah, 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 blah. And then he goes to the conciliary pretty much guy. And he's like, hey, I just need a small loan. And the like conciliary guy knows he's got him at that point. He's like, okay, no problem. We're friends now. And he's like, yeah, it's all good. He's like, what do you need the loan for? And he's like, well, I just, it's not that I didn't know it was going to be this hard. I just like misidentified the number. I just need a little more money until we get these reviews and everything. And then the mob guy is like, whoa, I can get you good reviews in all those highbrow magazines. I can get you like the foot traffic and everything. And Mikey's like, whoa, what, really? And he's like, yeah, I'm a mob guy in a movie. I can do whatever.
Yeah.
And so now.
He's like, I forgot the joke I was going to tell. We'll cut that out.
I have this miscellaneous amorphous set of skills and powers. Oh, this is good. All right.
All right.
I dig it.
Yeah. Okay. Is that the midpoint?
That's the midpoint.
That feels like a pretty solid midpoint. It might be a little closer to the beginning than like, you know, like 5 minutes shy of the actual midpoint, but that's the spiritual midpoint.
Yeah.
All right. Do we anything else we gotta do before we take the break and get some names and
We do have a couple of minutes.
Because
with editing, we definitely have at least like 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay.
I think we should establish what kind of statement we're making with this, because right now it's just kind of like a watch this kid struggle, and...
This whole movie is really just about how to make the perfect chicken parm. What do we want to say with this movie?
Because right now it's just kind of a watch this kid struggle, and then it turns into kind of a, you know, the power trip, watch the money come in, watch everything work out.
But have you seen Goodfellas?
Yeah, what was Goodfellas about? I mean, it's a good movie, but like...
I don't know. Martin Scorsese kind of does the same thing over and over, and it's pretty good, so we're all okay with it.
That's true. It is kind of like a personal
tragedy. You watch crime, and you watch it kind of work out for some people.
Yeah.
And everyone else gets very murdered.
That's true. Maybe it could be like a Scorsese-type movie. Ah! I was thinking about it more like a generic blockbuster for everybody. Very unobtrusive. Like, oh, good triumphs or whatever. But if it's more like a Scorsese type, where it's kind of like a personal tragedy. Okay. We don't have to establish hard set rules for the second half right now. Since we just established the tone, this is solid.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yeah, that sounds good.
You got anything else for first half?
I mean, not really. I think we need to shore up, like, this mob guy. Like, hey, my name is Freddy Spaghetti. You might remember I'm a friend of your dad's. One of the items on the menu is named after me.
It's a calzone.
It's the spaghetti calzone.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just, like, he's around, and the FBI guy is like... Like, we know you're working for this guy. And he's like, I am literally not.
Yeah.
That
could be pretty good. He talks to Spaghetti. He talks to Spaghetti. And he's like, no, I don't want to hear it. And then he talks to the FBI guy. And he's like, then why were you talking to Freddy Spaghetti? And he smacks the photos on the table. Yeah. And he's like, I literally only told him to F off. I don't want to hear anything about the mob. And then FBI guy's like, I don't believe you. And he's like, okay, well, what if I went like this every time I saw him from now on? He's like... I still wouldn't believe you. But then when we see him the next time, he like straight up puts his fingers in his ears and he runs away because he's like, I know they're taking pictures of me right now.
Yeah.
Spaghetti.
Yeah. It's like, well, we're like Paisan now. It's like, I'm actually French Canadian. Originally, the name was Spagatois.
Oh my gosh. That's too clever for me to process right now. Oh gosh. Okay. I think the first half is in a pretty great place right now.
Okay. Would you say that this story is ta?
Ta?
Or would you say it's app? It's apt.
All right. We're going to come up with the name of the movie, the end names for all the characters, and the reason for everybody. But that's pretty much it.
And I'm gonna get a little piece of candy. Unrelated.
Cool. Sounds good.
Be right back. We're back.
We're back.
We're back.
We are back.
Guess who's back?
Us.
He got it in one.
Correct.
Okay, so the title we decided on, we went with Breaking Bread, even though that was like a throwaway joke that I told earlier. But it actually works pretty well because, you know, it does sound like Breaking Bad, which is funny and revolves around crime in the same way, but that also relates it back to food. And we thought it worked well, and it's also just kind of ominous and hits and just manages to hit on a lot of things, which we like to do with our titles, if we can.
And for the names, the protagonist is named Mike. He was going to be named Mikey, but we realized all of the main characters with names were all dudes with two-syllable names with the suffix E. So he's just Mike.
Well, you realize that. I didn't really notice or care.
The main character's name is Mike after Michael Corleone. The FBI lead detective investigating Mike is Martin. It was going to be Marty, but again, landed with an E. And that is a tribute to Scorsese. Then there's Freddy. We wanted to keep Freddy Spaghetti. That's a good name for a mob guy. He's just Freddy Spaghetti.
That's fun.
And then Mike's little brother is named Tony. There's no real reason for that. Well, Santino, kind of.
But, yeah.
After Sonny in Godfather Part 1. And then the indefinite number of kitchen staff, we're just going to name on the fly. Right now we've got Gordo, Antoine, and Jack after Gordon Ramsay, Anthony Bourdain, and Jacques Pepin.
But I don't know Jacques Pepin. Is he the...
He's a celebrity chef.
Is he the tortellini walking in the broth guy?
I don't think so.
Who's the tortellini walking in a broth guy?
I can't remember.
Okay, well, we'll figure it out. If somebody figures that out, let us know. You don't know how to get in contact, you figure it out.
I'm sure they could somehow. That would be pretty alarming.
That'd be pretty fun. It's like, it's whatever his name is. I want to see how that works out. Okay, so where were we? He has borrowed money from Freddy.
Yeah, he's agreed to basically make the restaurant what it was before his dad went to prison.
Right, with a Faustian pact.
Yes, pretty much. So.
Yes. Well, that's not really more of the same. It's that the restaurant, he's renovating the restaurant. He's doing bigger, better things
here. Yeah, he's making the restaurant into like his dream project.
Yeah.
And relying on mob money and connections to make it as important as it is. As important as he wants it to be.
Yay!
And we've established the tone. It's a Scorsese movie, and in all the Scorsese mob movies, they're like little personal tragedies that are like really gritty and personal. So with that, where do we want it to go? I'm kind of thinking, well, no, I don't know what I'm thinking.
Is his brother gonna die? Is his dad gonna get shivved to death in prison? That feels very Scorsese-y.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I don't want to do that.
Me neither.
But
we
could.
I'm kind of thinking it could just be Goodfellas, where he goes into witness protection and sells out everybody else.
Right.
That might be.
And at the end, he's works a grill at a Denny's.
Oh gosh, that's so depressing. I don't want this to be too Scorsese. What really makes an impact? Let me... I'm in between make it Scorsese because it'll be kind of fun, but I don't want to make it as depressing as one of those. And making it the mainstream blockbuster, but we always do that. And that's kind of the point, is to prove that...
I mean, are you pretending that Scorsese isn't mainstream successful?
But unobtrusive. Like, someone gets stabbed in prison. It's instead of like a wide shot that's like, oh damn, that it do be like that sometimes. It's like a slow-mo dramatic, like, no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we don't actually show any gritty details because that's gross and I don't like it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, let's... what statement do we want to make with it? He feels really bad.
Good.
It's okay because he feels bad.
That's nothing like a Scorsese movie where we feel bad at the end.
Maybe he feels bad I had a point. I was going to go somewhere with that. I can't remember now. Wait, okay, how about this? He feels bad. We play it up that this was a once-in-a-lifetime. Not even a once-in-a-lifetime. This is very uncommon for a chef to be involved in crime like this. Okay, yeah. Pinch point in between, like, the climax of the movie and that midpoint is him revealing to the kitchen staff, like, guys, this is only working. I have big news. I'm in the mob. And all of his kitchen staff are like, cool, whatever. And he's like, what, fellas? I thought that. And they're like, no, dude. We are all criminals. Except for, like, Becky. She's just didn't really have the time to become a criminal.
Yeah.
And there, it's, like, if you don't know about, and I'm saying like I do, but if you don't know about the kind of people who work, like line cooks, then you're like, that's kind of funny. And if you do know, you're like, that's really funny, because I was presented with the usual Hollywood, oh, we're all good people and we work like 9 to 5 in the kitchen. And you get the real world smack in the face of, oh, working as a line cook, you work like 16-hour days. Working as a chef, you work like 20-hour days. And of course, people, like, everybody's on drugs.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for all of that, but Anthony Bourdain's book said that was pretty much it.
Yep.
And we're going to work like that's the gospel truth. So that's sort of like the twist, that all of the cooks are cool with it. And, oh, that could be kind of like the cautionary tale part of it. He's at first, he's relieved. Oh, they're all good with it. Hell yeah. And then they're like, well, now that you know that we're all super hard criminals, let's really get into the mob stuff. And then that's when he starts pumping the brakes. He's like, what? No, fellas, I just needed like a small loan. And he's like, no, dude, let's ride this all the way to the top. So what does he do? It could be. Here we go. I got the theme.
He's got it. A theme.
It's family.
What?
It's family.
Family?
Family.
Family.
Like, what is that? Like, not Grand Theft Auto. What is that called?
Fast and the Furious?
Fast and Furious.
Okay.
It's like a Fast and Furious
movie. We'll touch back on that later.
Huh?
You confused Grand Theft Auto and Fast and Furious?
Cars.
Cars. Fair enough.
Anyway. It's, like, the whole theme is fam. Just, in the first half, it's, like, blood family. And then the second half, it's, like, the mob's not in here, and this is me really generalizing about stuff I know nothing about, but in the second half is the mob's not in the kitchen, working super hard, sweating and bleeding for what we believe in. We don't, so we are relying on them, but when we sell them out, it's not me selling out the mob and all of my kitchen staff. The climax is, I'm selling, yeah, okay, it's going to have a really Italian job, kind of campy feel to it, but he sells out all the mob people. And do you work under the assumption that he's also selling out all of his kitchen staff? And then there's some kind of twist, and that's for something that we can talk about, that's bad for Tom. There's some kind of twist where it's he reveals, ah, no, I covered my bases. All of my kitchen staff is safe because they're my family.
Right. I feel like an option here is, like, somebody in the restaurant has to go to jail, and he's like, all right, take me.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that could be Gordo or Antoine, who, like, takes over as chef while he's in prison, and he only gets, like, 5 years.
Right.
All right. This is turning into something kind of naive, kind of, like I said, a little campy, but I don't really care too much. It's just another episode of Story Tap. It's all good. We're flexing our creative muscles.
Let it go.
We're sore.
It's Story Tap.
Let it go. I don't. What is that guy's name in Chinatown?
I don't remember. Yeah. I've never seen it.
Let it go, Jack Nicholson. It's Story Tap.
Story Tap in our new creaky chairs.
If we had a following and I was kind of a sellout, that would be the shirt. Let it go, Jack Nicholson. It's Story Tap. And then it would have like the Chinatown font. I might make that a shirt.
I like that.
Someday.
That's a fun shirt.
That's kind of funny.
What I want is for the podcast to never actually really take off, but for our shirts to get really popular for some reason.
Let it go, Jack Nicholson. It's Story Tap. Okay. We gotta come back. Come back down. Okay. Midpoint. We are now in with the mob. We're working toward the pinch point of, hey, fellas, I got big bad news. I cut a deal with the mob. We might cut out his little brother entirely.
He doesn't seem important.
He does not seem important at all. We can decide that.
He gets shot in a different movie.
Yeah. Very good. No, no, Tony from Breaking Bread.
Definitely real.
Yeah. And what should the climax be? That is something that would need a lot of setup. That would be very boring to listen to. Like in The Italian Job.
Right.
You know, something like, oh, wow, we were planning for this the whole time.
Okay, it's got to be either some sort of conflict with Martin or Freddy, either with the mob or the FBI guy. Obviously, Freddy has been like, hey, we're friends, right? I need you to do me this favor.
Yeah.
Like, hide this, I don't know, it's like 20 kilograms of cocaine. Put it in the kitchen, covered up by all that food smell, so dog couldn't find it.
Throw a blanket over it.
It's fine. You can sit on it.
Yeah. And that's what...
Okay, yeah.
And that is in between the midpoint and the pinch point of we're riding high. We're thinking we've got it all figured out. That's, you know, we're making a lot of money. Mike is making a lot of money.
Right.
That's the whole, the power trip. That's the power trip part where everything's working out. Yeah, we're living in secrecy, but like, I'm getting away with it. So it's not really hard work. I feel cool. I feel powerful. And then that's sort of like the bringing down to the real world. Oh, I don't just agree to a deal with, quote, the mob, and they give me what I want. No, I have to do y'all favors. And then here's, like, a literal ton of coke that I have to hide somehow in my restaurant.
Yeah.
And then for him, he sort of starts talking to the kitchen staff about, and that's the pinch point. He brings it up. He talks to them.
Yeah. But one of them is like, oh, I've hidden way more cocaine than this.
Yeah. And... oh, that's pretty good. If we establish Freddy, the FBI... or not Freddy. If...
Martin is the FBI guy. Freddy is...
Freddy is the mob guy, my bad, yeah. If we establish Martin as, like, kind of a green detective, and he's, like, trying to take down someone big in the mob, as to, like, prove himself in the Bureau, then it would be pretty great to make this movie... yeah, this is a campy crime family story... where all of the kitchen staff starts ribbing on Martin, like, is it your first time in a kitchen? Literally everyone is like this all the time. Like, they have a better understanding of, like, what to say and what not to say so as to get away with this stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty tight. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
So, that climax is now a slow realization on Martin's part. Oh, I can't get anyone with anything because, like, nothing they said was under any kind of clause. I don't know. But, like, you know, it's like if I were to say in a bar, like, yeah, I just killed 6 people. Like, the fact of the matter is I didn't do it, and I'm joking. It's like when rappers release songs saying, like, I killed 6 people. I don't know.
I don't know. It's like a recording of you saying you killed 6 people. I mean, afterwards, it's not going to hold up a court if you say, I was joking. I'll give you a bunch of details. For real, bro?
That, oh, man. Oh, yo. Okay. Yo. Add a new character. Martin's not super old, but older, wiser partner who's been on it for a while now. And he's like, you're not going to get the mob. And then he realizes Martin's partner is like, well, you might get him with this Mike guy. He doesn't know what he's doing. You could get him to like slip up. And then here's, okay, I don't know exactly how the finale is going to work. The climax is going to work. But it is Martin with like a stack of papers. He's like, oh, this is so great. This is the big case that's going to like break and da-da-da. And he comes into like the Bureau or wherever he agreed he was going to meet his partner. And he gets there and his partner is chilling with all of the kitchen staff and Mike. And he's having a great time. And he's like, yo, what's up? Sit down. You're fucking idiot. And he's like, his world comes crashing down. He's like, what? No. I got him. I got all these guys. And he's like, you have clearly never dealt with kitchen staff before. And then he's like, Antoine. And Antoine is like, I got this one murdering a man in like the Suez Canal. And he's like, book him, Martin. And like they all laugh at Martin. And, you know, Martin's partner used to work in a kitchen or something. So he like knows like this is just how it is and all of that. And then Martin presents that one piece that's like, no, photographs drugs in the kitchen. And Martin's partner is like, oh, damn. For me to ignore that would not be like, forget it, it's Chinatown. That would be like straight up, I have to do this. This is my job. And then that is Mike being like, yeah, I know. That's me. And then everybody's like, what? Yo, Mike, we don't want to see you go. We can all go with you. And he's like, dude, that's dumb. Y'all know that's dumb. He's like, yeah, we know that's dumb. But that's Mike like proving himself. That's him like sort of crossing the threshold.
Coming of age, if you will.
But not really. That's him. That is the big sacrifice he makes for his family. And we established he had a conversation with his dad at some point, probably after the pinch point, where he like asks his dad for guidance. And he's like, learn from my mistakes, my son. Like, I went away because I didn't do this right. I knew about this thing. And Mike's like, oh, well, I know about that. And then he's like, ah. Because you ignored. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Because you ignored your family in the first half. Now you've got to go to prison, too.
Thank you.
But because you're listening to your family in the second half, you can only make the same mistake that I did. Only one person's got to go. You see what I'm going for?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So we've got, like, 5-10 minutes left.
Right. Well, I mean, like, that just kind of... Let's just work out our denouement a little bit. I'm so self-conscious about saying French words now. I don't know when that happened.
If you go all in, the only people that are going to make fun of you are French.
Fair enough. And I don't care what they think.
There you go. Because, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda and whoever directed it, I assume he did, Encanto. I like to say that I'm nearly fluent in Spanish. When I order at a restaurant, I still say, like, the tacos de pez or whatever, because I'm so scared of being made fun of. But not anymore. Yeah, like,
fair enough.
Even if you don't nail it, even if you botch it completely, they get what you're going for. So they're like, whatever.
I feel like fluent is a reach for us. We're pretty good. We're solidly proficient in Spanish.
I know how to carry a conversation talking about pretty much anything, as long as they speak kind of slow.
All right.
And don't use any, like, idioms and stuff. You know what I mean?
You, sir, are the idiom.
Okay,
so I feel like we've got, and is Freddy still just kind of out here doing Freddy stuff?
They put Freddy away. I completely forgot about Freddy Spaghetti.
Freddy Spaghetti.
I think that maybe, I don't want to make it so that Freddy Spaghetti keeps on coming around and keeps on doing mob stuff.
I feel like just our denouement is, Martin in the car watching Freddy.
Yeah.
It's like long game.
Yeah, that's a never-ending battle kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like the mob's going to keep doing what they're doing, but it's not like that's okay. The FBI's always going to keep on. The law enforcement's always going to keep on coming out.
We got Antoine standing in a chef in the kitchen, and then we've got Mike and his dad in the kitchen, in the prison kitchen. Cooking Phil, you know, once again, putting green stuff on brown stuff, and they'll be like, what is this green stuff? And like, I don't know, but it's definitely a plant, so.
That's pretty tight.
This is pretty good for prison food.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. And
that's disgusting. Pretty good for prison food.
Yeah, that is an excellent denouement. From outside, Freddy is going into the restaurant, and then there's Martin watching him with binoculars, and inside the restaurant, he orders something from Antoine, who is now the chef. And then he's like, oh, I'm not so sure about that. Hang on. And he's on the phone with who else but Mike, who is talking to him in a prison uniform. He's like, blah, 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 I don't got time for this. You're the chef. Shut up. And then he hangs up. And then he's like, hey, Dad, I'm ready. And they're on the line. They're cooking. So he's basically running the restaurant from prison.
Mm.
And they're both in there for a short stint.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is great. Snaps. Fresh snaps.
I've never been able to do that.
I mean, I can't either. I can do it, but it sounds like I'm just like,
I don't know what I'm trying to do.
We'll go over your form later. We're not recording a podcast. But this is pretty solid. Let's see how we're doing time-wise. 20 minutes here. That's more like 15 here after editing.
Okay.
So I think it's good.
It's good to be back. It's fun doing this again.
Yeah. A little rusty, but we've got a new formula. So it's pretty solid.
Creaky old joints.
Creaky. And this is a great table, too. We're getting a little too off track. To recap... We don't need a recap. If you're listening to the episode, you listen pretty closely.
You don't care. You just love the sound of my voice. Just love to hear us talk our back and forth and everything.
I was going to do the whole player named Gus. Oh, yeah. And like get really close to the mic. But that's only funny once, and I've done that a couple hundred times.
Got it.
So I think the potential of this story has been sufficiently tapped.
Oh, he said it. Like a tree in the woods that we're going to extract sap from to make sweet, sweet maple syrup.
You've done that a couple times.
I have?
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume.
On like two other episodes.
Well, I'm hoping I'm keeping that one at least a little fresh. Like our syrup.
Right. So, the end?
The end. The end.
Thanks for listening to this episode of StoryTap. If you enjoyed, make sure to leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It helps a ton. Also, make sure to check out the podcast Story Break by Rocket Jump. It's basically what you just listened to, but more professional. And thanks again.